Ever get that feeling like companies are kind of messing with us?
Messing with us, how so?
Like, you know, when you go to the store and you're looking for a specific soda, but it's like mysteriously gone, only to find it at another store across town where your usual brand is suddenly nowhere to be found.
Interesting.
So today, we are diving deep into the world of product-based collusion
Oh, okay.
to see if those suspicions, like, actually hold water.
Gotcha.
And to guide us through this, we have a research essay by Afsanul Haseeb, a student at Queen's University.
Okay.
He looked at the soft drink industry and he used real-world data to see how companies might be like coordinating behind the scenes
Yeah.
to like influence what we see and what we pay.
That's fascinating
I know.
because it's not just about companies fixing prices, which is what most people think of with collusion. It's like more about these subtle strategies,
Oh.
like specializing in certain products or avoiding direct competition in certain stores.
All of which can really affect what we see in the soda aisle.
Okay, so let's get into Haseeb's research.
Sure.
He starts off with a really good overview of existing studies on collusion.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that he found that a lot of the research focuses on the obvious stuff,
Like a.
you know, like price manipulation
Yeah.
or controlling how much product is out there.
Okay.
But this idea of product-based collusion,
Yeah.
especially in markets like soft drinks where there's tons of variations,
Yay.
it hasn't really been explored in depth,
Huh.
which is wild
Yeah.
because traditional ways of spotting collusion might totally miss these sneakier tactics.
So companies could be colluding right under our noses.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Think of it this way, you know, like you or your roommate hate doing dishes.
I do, actually.
You don't like formally agree to split the chore,
Right.
but you kind of fall into this pattern where one person always does dishes
Yep.
and the other cleans the bathroom.
Yeah.
No words needed, just an unspoken agreement.
Right.
Oh, so companies might be doing something similar,
Yeah, exactly.
but with products instead of chores.
Right.
So like they're silently agreeing to focus on certain drinks or avoid stepping on each other's toes in certain stores.
Yeah, precisely. But proving this is it's tricky
Why?
because companies can always say they're just, specializing.
Right.
And it's hard to tell if that's true or just a cover for something, more strategic.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So, how did Haseeb try to figure out what was really going on?
So he used this treasure trove of data from Dominic's Finer Foods.
Oh, cool.
This was back in the early 90s.
Okay.
It covered a bunch of stores in the Chicago area,
Got it.
and it included weekly sales, prices, even what specific products were on the shelves.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really specific.
Yeah, he focused specifically on the big two, Coca-Cola and Pepsi.
Oh, the Cola Wars.
I love it.
The ultimate rivalry. Coke and Pepsi always battling it out.
Right. And that's what makes this data so juicy.
Okay.
Haseeb, he noticed this curious geographic pattern.
Like what?
Like, Coke seemed to have a stronghold in stores closer to the city center,
Uh-huh.
while Pepsi dominated the outskirts.
Interesting. So they each had their own territory.
It's almost like they were carving up the city.
Really?
Yeah, staking their claim on different territory.
Hold on. Are you suggesting they were deliberately choosing to avoid direct competition?
It's a question worth asking.
Wow.
Could this be an early sign of product-based collusion?
I mean, maybe.
To dig deeper, Haseeb went beyond just looking at typical market share, how much money a company makes.
Right.
He analyzed something he called product count share.
Okay, so instead of dollars and cents,
Yeah.
he looked at how many different products each brand had in a given store.
Exactly. And here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, tell me.
While Coke sometimes had higher sales in specific stores, Pepsi consistently offered a wider array of products across most locations.
Ah.
And this was throughout the whole 5 years of data he analyzed.
So Pepsi was playing the long game.
They were flooding the market with more choices.
Wow. So even if Coke was winning in some places, Pepsi was making sure their products were always front and center.
You got it. To visualize this, Haseeb used this statistical technique
Okay.
to see how the product count shares were distributed.
Uh-huh.
And guess what?
Right?
Instead of a typical bell curve,
Where most data is in the middle.
right,
Yeah.
he found a graph with two distinct peaks.
Two peaks. What does that mean?
It means the way products were spread out wasn't random.
Okay.
Something was influencing those peaks. making it less like a natural distribution and more like a deliberate choice.
Oh.
Almost like those companies had a hand in deciding which products landed where.
Okay, that's starting to sound a little suspicious.
Yeah.
But wouldn't these companies try to, like, get an edge on each other sometimes?
Of course.
Like, wouldn't one company try to grab more market share,
oh,
even
God.
If there was this, like, unspoken agreement?
Absolutely. And Haseeb saw evidence of that in the data, too.
Oh, well.
There were these moments of deviation and retaliation.
Interesting.
Sort of a push and pull between the two giants.
Okay.
For example, Coke's market share suddenly shot up in one quarter, only to gradually decline as Pepsi seemingly responded, bringing things back to a more, you know, balanced state.
So it's like a constant dance.
Exactly.
Like they were watching each other.
Each company carefully watching the other.
Yeah.
Ready to defend their turf.
If things got out of line.
Yeah.
So they were cooperating, but also competing.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
And that's where some fascinating economic theory comes into play.
Ooh, I love this part.
Specifically, something called the Grimm trigger strategy.
What's that?
Imagine you and a friend are playing a game.
Okay.
You can either cooperate and both win,
uh-huh,
or cheat and try to win more.
Okay.
But there's a catch.
What's the catch?
If one of you cheats, the other will never cooperate with you again.
Whoa, that's serious.
Right.
So the threat of punishment is what keeps everyone in line.
Exactly. And that's what Haseeb thinks might be happening with Coke and Pepsi.
Okay.
They know if one tries to dominate,
yeah,
the other will retaliate,
uh-huh,
possibly leading to a price war that hurts them both.
So they're stuck.
They're basically stuck in this high-stakes game of chicken.
Wow.
Trying to get the most out of their agreement.
Yeah.
Without triggering a total meltdown.
And one of the key factors in this whole equation is something called the degree of product substitution.
All right.
Okay, break that down for me.
All right, so think about it this way.
Okay.
If you want a Coke,
yeah,
but the store only has Pepsi,
yeah,
would you settle?
Good question.
If yes, then Coke and Pepsi are highly substitutable in that scenario.
Makes sense. So how does this affect the whole collusion thing?
Well, Haseeb found that when products are very similar, it's harder for companies to collude.
Really? Why?
The temptation to break the unspoken agreement,
yeah,
and grab more market share,
yeah,
it's just too strong.
I could see that.
Especially if customers are willing to, you know, switch between brands.
So it's like, why play nice when you can steal your rival's customers?
Exactly. But what if you're like a diehard Coke fan?
Yeah.
And nothing else will do.
Right.
Does that change things?
It seems like it should.
Absolutely. If products are less substitutable,
yeah,
companies might be more willing to stick to their designated product spaces.
Okay.
They know a price war won't necessarily, you know, win over many new customers.
Right.
So it's less risky to just play along.
So Haseeb just stopped there.
Oh, no, no, no.
Like he just noticed these patterns in the data.
No, he actually...
Did he try to explain it?
He did. He actually created a mathematical framework.
Wow.
To simulate the strategic decision,
okay,
companies might make,
yeah,
in different situations.
Got it.
Taking into account things like product substitution, and which company had the upper hand.
So he went all in on this.
He did.
So what did he find?
He explored several different scenarios, and the results were really revealing.
Like what?
One of the most fascinating findings was that this kind of product space collusion,
yeah,
is easier to pull off when companies offer things that aren't direct substitutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So instead of Coke and Pepsi both battling it out,
uh-huh,
with classic colas,
yeah,
maybe one focuses on classic,
right,
while the other goes all in on like fruit flavors.
Exactly.
So they're not stepping on each other's toes.
It's like strategically dividing up the market.
Yeah.
To avoid too much direct competition.
That makes a lot of sense.
This can make the whole unspoken agreement much easier to maintain.
Right.
Yeah.
This is getting really interesting. But let's dive deeper into those scenarios Haseeb explored. I'm dying to know what else he uncovered.
Let's do it. Okay, so Haseeb, he starts with this simplified model.
Yeah.
Just two products.
Got it.
Let's call them product K and product K prime.
Okay, so like our Coke and Pepsi example.
Yeah, but a bit more abstract.
Okay.
He wanted to see how the degree of substitution between those two products affected the discount factor.
Oh, right. The discount factor.
Needed for collusion to like stick.
Right. So just to refresh our listeners' memories.
Yeah.
A higher discount factor means companies are playing the long game.
Exactly.
More focused on future profits.
Right.
Even if it means giving up some gains right now.
Precisely.
Got it.
And what Haseeb found was pretty interesting.
Okay, tell me.
As those two products became more and more similar,
you know,
easier to substitute for each other.
Right.
The required discount factor went up.
Oh, interesting.
Basically, if product K and K Prime were practically identical, companies would need to be incredibly patient.
Got it.
To make collusion worthwhile.
Because the temptation to, like, undercut the competition.
Yeah.
And snag those customers.
Exactly.
Would be through the roof.
Why wait for future profits when you can just snatch them up right now?
Exactly.
Right. Haseeb's model even showed that if those products were perfect substitutes,
okay,
meaning customers saw them as totally interchangeable, the discount factor needed would be greater than one.
Wait, didn't you say the discount factor goes from zero to one?
That's the point.
Okay.
A discount factor above one just doesn't exist.
In the real world.
Right. It would mean companies value future profits more than present profits.
Yeah.
Which, you know, wouldn't make much business sense.
Right. Of course not.
Yeah.
So this scenario suggests that when products are almost the same, like basically identical.
Yeah.
Tacit collusion is basically impossible.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Like companies are just too likely to say, screw it.
Right.
And try to grab a bigger slice of the market.
That's a great takeaway.
Thanks.
Now, things get even more interesting when Haseeb looked at a scenario with two companies, each with two products.
Got it.
So let's say company one has product A and product B.
Yeah.
While company two has product C and product D.
Okay, I'm following.
Now, imagine products A and B are pretty similar, like different types of cola.
Yeah, yeah.
But products C and D are totally different. Maybe a lemon lime soda and a root beer.
So in that case, wouldn't the motivation to collude be like stronger?
Exactly.
Especially if nobody's directly stepping on anyone else's toes.
Right. The companies could carve out their own little territories in the market without much conflict.
Like a peaceful coexistence.
Yeah, like a peaceful coexistence.
Where everyone gets their share.
Everyone gets their share. Yeah. But hold on.
What?
Things get even more complex.
Yeah.
When you start mixing those product pairs.
Oh, okay.
What if company one has products A and C?
Okay.
While company two has products C and D?
So now they both have product C.
You got it.
That sounds like trouble.
That overlap creates tension.
Okay.
And Haseeb found that the discount factor needed to keep collusion going in this scenario, like, shot way up.
Oh, wow.
Making it much harder to sustain that unspoken agreement.
Because the company with product C and D could be tempted to undercut the other company on product C.
Precisely.
Knowing they could, like, potentially snag a ton of new customers.
Exactly. And the more similar those overlapping products were, the more precarious that whole collusive agreement became.
So even when it seems like companies are playing nice, there's this underlying potential for conflict.
Yeah.
Especially when they're both vying for the same customers.
Right.
Did Haseeb take this even further?
He did.
Did he look at what happens with, like, even larger product portfolios?
He did. He even analyzed what happens when both companies have all four products.
Okay.
A, B, C, and D.
Wow. That's a lot to keep track of.
I know, right?
I'd imagine that would make collusion even harder.
It might seem counterintuitive.
Okay.
But he actually found that having the same products can make collusion easier.
Easier.
To sustain, yeah. Okay. Remember the Grimm trigger strategy?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if both companies have the same products, they both have equal power to retaliate if the other one tries to cheat.
So it's like a standoff.
Yeah, like a standoff.
Nobody wants to make the first move.
Right.
Because the consequences could be disastrous.
It's a classic case of, what's it called?
Mutually assured destruction.
Mutually assured destruction, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The potential damage from all-out competition is so high that it actually creates an incentive to cooperate.
Wow.
Even if it's just, you know, an unspoken agreement.
This is blowing my mind. So sometimes having more weapons can actually lead to peace.
It's a fascinating takeaway.
It is. It really is.
But here's the question.
Yeah?
Did Haseeb's model actually prove that this was going on with Coke and Pepsi?
In Dominic's data.
Right. And that's where things get a bit tricky.
How so?
While his model is super valuable for understanding how this could work, mapping it perfectly onto real-world data is...
tough.
It's tough.
Okay.
Remember, proving tacit collusion is incredibly difficult.
Right.
There's no contract, no paper trail.
It's all just...
like those subtle patterns.
Yeah. Hints.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
So we can't say for sure that Coke and Pepsi were definitely colluding based on Haseeb's work.
Right. But his findings definitely raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, they do.
And give us like a whole new way of looking at the competitive landscape.
Okay.
The geographic patterns,
yeah.
Those differences in product variety,
uh-huh.
And the instances of companies pushing back against each other.
Right.
It all suggests that something more than just pure market forces might be shaping what we see.
On those shelves.
Right.
It's like we have pieces of a puzzle,
yeah,
but not the whole picture.
Exactly.
We see these hints of coordination,
yeah,
but can't definitively say for sure what's really going on.
Exactly. And that's often the case with economic research.
Oh.
We gather the evidence,
yeah.
Build these models, and,
mm-hmm.
and try to make sense of complex patterns.
Right.
Haseeb's work doesn't give us all the answers.
I mean, fair enough.
But it opens up a crucial conversation about products-based collusion.
Yeah, it does.
And how it might be affecting, the consumer.
It definitely makes you think twice about those seemingly simple choices
mm-hmm.
you make at the store.
Yeah.
Right? Like, maybe there's a lot more going on behind the scenes.
Right.
Than we realize.
That's the key takeaway from Haseeb's research.
Okay.
It encourages us to look beyond the surface,
yeah.
And consider the subtle ways companies might be shaping our buying habits, even without us realizing it.
It's a reminder that competition isn't always this straightforward battle.
Right.
There are these intricate layers and strategies at play,
yeah.
That we might not even be aware of.
Exactly. And while we can't say definitively whether those is Pepsi okay moments
right.
are part of a grand product space scheme,
yeah.
They definitely highlight the complexities of competition
right.
And the importance of being informed consumers.
This deep dive has been a real eye-opener.
It has.
To say the least.
We've gone from those initial suspicions about companies playing games
right.
with what's on the shelves
yeah.
to uncovering some pretty convincing evidence
yeah.
that something more strategic might be at play.
We've explored how companies might be dividing up the market.
Right.
The factors that influence whether this type of collusion works.
Uh-huh.
And even pondered whether those out-of-stock situations
yeah.
are as innocent as they seem.
Right.
And perhaps most importantly,
yeah.
we've armed our listeners with the knowledge to think critically
right.
about the choices they make at the store.
Exactly.
And to recognize that even in something as seemingly simple as the soda aisle,
yeah.
there might be more going on.
Than meets the eye.
Than meets the eye.
So the next time you're at the supermarket,
yeah.
remember what we've discussed today.
Okay.
Ask yourself, are the choices I see truly a reflection
mm-hmm.
of a free and competitive market?
Good question.
Or are there subtle forces at play
yeah.
influencing what's available and ultimately what ends up in my shopping cart?
That's a great question for all of us to ponder.
A huge thanks to Afsanul Haseeb
yes.
for his thought-provoking research.
Absolutely.
And to you, our expert guide.
Oh, stop
for it. Walking us through the intricacies of product space collusion.
You're too kind.
And to our listeners.
Yes.
We encourage you to stay curious.
Stay curious.
Keep questioning. And as always,
keep diving deep.
Keep diving deep until next time.
Okay, so we've talked about how companies might be carving up the market, like intentionally limiting choices in certain areas.
Right.
But what about those times when a store's out of one brand?
Yeah.
And tries to like offer you another.
Yeah.
You know, like those classic is Pepsi okay moments.
Right, right.
Could that be part of this whole product space game?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
On the surface, it just seems like a simple stock issue.
Right, yeah.
But what if it's more than that?
Okay.
What if it's a subtle tactic, a way for one brand to kind of nudge you towards their product?
Yeah, yeah.
When your usual choice is conveniently unavailable.
Right.
Remember how Haseeb found that Pepsi consistently offered a wider range of products?
Yeah, in most stores.
Right, exactly.
So maybe they're strategically creating these situations
uh-huh.
where you're kind of forced to consider Pepsi.
Yeah.
Even if you're like a diehard Coke fan.
Exactly. It could be a clever way to, you know, chip away at the competition's market share.
Yeah.
Without
without sparking a full-blown price war.
Right.
Plus, it plays on our, you know, our natural desire to just grab something quickly.
Yeah, you're at the store.
Right, when we're at the store.
If you're thirsty and Coke isn't an option.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to walk away empty-handed.
Exactly. It's like they're using scarcity to gently steer us towards their product.
It really makes you think, like, how much of what we see is intentionally orchestrated to, like, influence our choices.
That's the key takeaway from Haseeb's research. Mm. It encourages us to, like, look beyond the surface and consider these subtle ways that companies might be shaping our buying habits.
Even without us realizing it.
Exactly.
It's a reminder that competition isn't always this, like, straightforward battle.
Right.
There are all these intricate layers and strategies at play that we might not even be aware of.
Exactly. And while we can't say for sure whether those is Pepsi okay moments
are part of like a grand product space scheme, they definitely highlight the complexities of competition.
Yeah.
And the importance of being, you know, informed consumers.
This deep dive has been...
it's been a lot. Yeah.
A real eye-opener, to say the least. We've gone from those initial suspicions about companies playing games with what's on the shelves to uncovering some pretty convincing evidence that something more strategic might be at play. We've explored how companies might be dividing up the market, the factors that influence whether this type of collusion works, and even pondered whether those out-of-stock situations are as innocent as they seem.
It's a lot to think about.
And perhaps most importantly... We've armed our listeners with the knowledge to think critically about the choices they make at the store.
Right.
And to recognize that even in something as seemingly simple as the soda aisle, there might be more going on.
Than meets the eye.
Than meets the eye. So the next time you're at the supermarket, just remember what we've discussed today.
Okay.
You know, ask yourself, are the choices I see truly a reflection of, you know, like a free and competitive market?
Yeah.
Or are there these subtle forces at play influencing what's available?
Right.
And ultimately what ends up in my shopping cart?
That's a great question for all of us to think about.
I think so.
A huge thanks to Afsanul Haseeb for his thought-provoking research.
Absolutely.
And to you.
Oh, you're welcome.
For walking us through the intricacies of product space collusion.
My pleasure.
And to our listeners, we encourage you to stay curious.
Stay curious.
Keep questioning. And as always,
keep diving deep.
Keep diving deep. Until next time.